Support for IPR comes from Corridor Vein Center and Corridor Aesthetics, treatment for varicose veins and spider veins, also providing facial rejuvenation services and treatment for moderate to severe acne. More at Corridor Vein and CorridorAesthetics.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and it has been a rough summer for lawns in Iowa. If your lawn is looking worse for the weather and wear, now is a great time to get to work on getting it back in shape. Iowa State University horticulture specialist Aaron Style will be here in a few minutes to answer your plant questions, but we are going to start the hour with turf grass specialist Adam Tomes. He is an assistant professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. Hello, Adam.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here. And I know it's been very, very dry, especially in central Iowa, some other parts of the state. It's been a tough summer for lawns, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. Starting out in the spring, it was really kind of a dry spring, and it continued on to the summer. So it has not been a pleasant growing season for most people's yards.
And the heat did a number on them too, right?
Yeah. The high temperatures and then the steady wind that we've had with that has really done a number to dry out the soil.
So if we're trying to think about drought recovery this time of year, what does that look like?
Yeah, so, you know, luckily the large parts of the state have gotten rain over the last couple of weeks, which has started to green things up. And that's going to be the first step towards, you know, the growing out of the drought that we've had. And so we'll continue to hope that we get regular rainfalls and that we can continue to thicken it. But the next thing would be to make sure that you get fertilizer ahead of some of these rainfalls out in your yard so that that way the grass that's there can get fed and recover and start to regrow and fill back in some of those areas that you've lost.
When you are putting fertilizer on the lawn, I know a lot of people worry about that getting washed out with rainfall. Do you need to look at the forecast before you put on the fertilizer?
Yeah, you want to look at the forecast for sure and, you know, make sure that you're not going to have a torrential prediction of rain. You know, a one-inch rain would be fine. And then the other thing that we want to think about is a slow-release fertilizer as opposed to a quick release for many of those applications. That's going to slowly release the nutrients over time and be better so that there's no runoff, especially in yards that are, you know, have bare spots.
Do you have any advice for making sure you're applying the right amount of fertilizer?
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, one of the things that we typically say is to apply 3/4 to 1 pound of a slow-release nitrogen fertilizer this time of year. And so there's some simple math calibration you could do to calibrate your spreader. Or some of the fertilizer bags already have done the work for you if you match the fertilizer to the fertilizer spreader. And they would give you the settings for that. Otherwise, you would just go out and weigh out the amount of fertilizer you need and spread it multiple directions across the yard. And that should give you the right amount of fertilizer per area.
Now, Adam, all spring and summer, we get phone calls from people who say, I need to reseed my lawn. How do I do that? And we keep saying, wait until the end of summer. So right now we are at the end of summer. What should people be thinking about if that's something that they need to do?
Yes. This is the time that we can say, okay, now it's time to start reseeding your yard or seeding it, whatever it might be. The perfect window we typically say is, you know, August 15th through September 15th for the whole state. And then, you know, if you're, I would say Highway 30 south in the state, you could even extend that seeding window to September 30th as far as that goes. But now's the time to start thinking about reseeding. And the reason behind that is the soil temps are perfect for quick germination. And a lot of the pesky weeds that outcompete grass or compete with it as it's trying to establish aren't germinating right now. So now's the time to do that.
What kind of conditions might tell you that you should overseed your lawn and just to add in seed to try to make the lawn a little more thick and lush?
Yep. So typical conditions there, you know, you've got patches of grass that are still thick and dense. And so you don't need to completely reseed. And that's typically what we like to say there. Also, maybe you've had some construction work in your yard, and so then overseeding those areas would be good right now, too. That'll help thicken it up. And that's typically the main steps there. If if you have a yard that's completely covered with a grass or plant species that you don't like, then that would be a total renovation. And again, now's the perfect time to do that as well. And so we would encourage you, you know, that if you're going to make a change in your yard, now would be the time to do that.
If somebody is seeding and they've got a big bare spot or a big bare lawn and they're seeding it, I see people try to keep that seed on the lawn in a number of different ways. Sometimes it looks like it's successful. Sometimes it looks like it's not successful. So do you have a favorite method?
Yeah, so, you know, I think the two biggest things that people struggle with or run into problems is, first and foremost, they need to get good seed-to-soil contact. And so if there was grass or plant material there that's died and you're seeding into that, go out there and rake that away first so that you can see the soil below. The grass seed doesn't do any good germinating in the thatch of dead grass that's there or dead plant material. So go ahead, make sure that you scrape away so you can see the soil beneath, and then seed into that. And then the other thing is, after you seed, make sure that you keep that seed wet for at least, you know, a couple weeks as it germinates. And we see that too. People get really excited. They seed their yard. They water it the day that they seed. And then they walk away and don't do anything with it. And so, you know, if you're going to reseed your yard and the rain quits coming, then you need to make efforts to try to get that seed up and germinated at the same time with keeping regular water applications on it.
And how about some of the things that people spread over the seed? Sometimes you see seed that's sprayed on with kind of a green goop that dries out, or you see people spreading straw and other things. Does something work better than other things?
Yeah, those products are all useful, and the main goal with those typically is to try to hold soil moisture and try to maintain it. And any of those products would work well. The key there is not to put too much down. So don't have that idea that an excessive amount of straw or, you know, a hydro seed type product or a mulch would be good. You know, we would like to see the soil just barely covered with that material just to kind of hold the moisture in there. So a quarter inch or less of material on the surface would be good. Once you start to put excessive amounts of material across that surface, then it's actually going to smother out the grass as it starts to germinate, because those seeds need to pop up and get to light very quickly as it starts to germinate.
All right, let's talk about fall aeration. Tell me what we should be thinking about there.
Yeah, so I think every year I come on the program and I talk about aeration. And again, now is a great time to start to aerate. We've gotten some rains the last few weeks. Hopefully, you know, throughout a lot of the state, your yards have started to green up. And so what it does is you go out and you're poking holes in the yard. And ideally, we like to use a Holotine aerator, something that actually pulls a core out of the ground. That would be the best. And that just kind of relieves compaction. It allows better gas exchange for the turf grass. And then it also allows, as the rains come, the water will soak down into your yard instead of running off. And so those are the real benefits of aeration this time of year.
And would you do it every year?
I would. I think that the benefits gained from that are so great that every year I would do that. That'll help strengthen your yard.
Is that, I know that you can rent tools like that. You can have your lawn service do it. Is it a tool that you think everybody should have in the garage?
You know, I think that it's something that you should rent every year and definitely do. Having it in your garage, you know, you only use it once a year. I'm not sure that I'd want to walk around it every day as far as that goes.
All right, let's talk about soil amendment. What's on your mind with that?
Yeah, so soil amendments, again, we keep in mind here that we're talking about trying to improve the soil. I get lots of pictures from new homeowners that have moved into an area. They don't have the best topsoil, and they've struggled all summer with keeping the grass alive or their yard green. And so now's a great time to, you know, if you're aerating, get some compost and try to top dress that a quarter inch or so over the yard up to a half inch and work that down into those aeration holes. Just spread it across the yard and drag it in. and that'll kind of help lighten the soil up a little bit. It'll provide some organic material, especially if you have a new yard that needs to be, some organic matter needs to be increased in it. And so that's going to improve the soil health as well. And so that's one of the things. If you're seeding a yard for the first time, actually work that material down into the soil with a rototiller or something like that. And that's going to improve in the long run.
Now, you've given me a long list of things to do. You also have something on the list to not do right now, and that's not to spray weeds. Why is that?
Yeah, so, you know, right now is not a great time to spray weeds. First of all, if you're going to reseed your yard, a lot of the herbicides have a restriction that you can't seed back into them for 3 or 4 weeks, and then that puts you outside of the seeding window. So we don't want to do that. We'd rather have you thicken your yard, putting grass seed into it right now. And so that's first and foremost. The other thing is a lot of herbicides have restrictions on them that you can't spray above 90 degrees Fahrenheit. And so a lot of the daytime temps are bumping 90 degrees. And so, you know, we don't want you breaking the law or using the product when it shouldn't be used. The weeds will take up the herbicide and you'll get good control of the weeds after the first frost. And so just go ahead and wait on that right now. There's no need to spray for weeds right now.
All right. And of course, we did see a lot of lawns go dormant this summer, as you mentioned, with the rain. A lot of things are really greening up again. Should a lot of us really not have much to worry about?
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of the state, the yards went into dormancy, but we managed to catch rains at just the right time. That hopefully your yard just went into dormancy and didn't actually die. And so I think it's not going to be as bad as what many people think.
All right. that's my kind of advice. Be patient and hope for the best on that.
Yeah.
All right. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Adam Tomes is here today, turf grass specialist. He's an assistant professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. Aaron Style will join us in just a moment, Iowa State University horticulture extension specialist. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. What are your questions today? 866-780-9100 is the number. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR comes from Corridor Vein Center and Corridor Aesthetics, treatment for varicose veins and spider veins, also providing facial rejuvenation services and treatment for moderate to severe acne. More at Corridor Vein and CorridorAesthetics.com.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Aaron Style. Hello, Aaron.
Good morning.
Welcome to the show. We also have Adam Tomes with us today, turf grass specialist and assistant professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. And Adam, I think you came on the show just in time because we have a lot of lawn questions for you today. You can join the conversation with your lawn questions or your other plant questions. Let's give Aaron some stuff to do today as well. Give us a call at 866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Dave is on the line in Norwalk. Hello, Dave.
Hi, guys. Can you hear me?
Just barely. What's your question, Dave?
How about that?
Yep,
how
that's
about
better.
That? Is that better? Okay, sorry. Hey, so I moved into a newer house for me, an older house. The lawn was awful. The guy with the greenest lawn I've ever seen in Iowa said, I said, what's your secret, bro? And he says, I put lime on it once a year. Fact or fiction? I have no idea. I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for your call, Dave. So, Adam, bro, what's your advice on that?
Yeah, so lime can be a useful ingredient to change soil pH. And so you really need to get a soil test before liming your yard. You can really mess it up as well if you get the soil pH outside of the the goal or positive range for growing plants. And typically for yards, we say your soil pH should be between 5.5 and 8.2 for pH. So get a soil test done before you lime your yard is what I would say on that.
All right, great. Tom is on the line next in Coon Rapids. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I have an area, my front yard is totally destroyed about every 3 to 4 years in the same area. I'm told it's a fungus issue. I've treated it with the dry stuff, watered in, and the hose end sprays. Same area, right where I'm at, we've missed a lot of the rains that everybody around us seems to be getting. And I guess I'm at a loss what to do.
Adam?
Yeah, that's a good question. Most diseases show up every year in the same spots as far as that goes, if the environmental conditions are right. So having something that shows up every 3 to 4 years.
For 3 to 4 years every year.
Oh, okay.
The last
okay.
3 to 4 years.
All right. Yeah, sure. So what I would suggest there then is I'm guessing that something has changed in your yard for a situation. Perhaps the trees have gotten bigger and they're keeping shade on it longer, which would keep the humidity up. So you might want to look at...
Those are full sun.
Okay.
Let me interrupt you here for a second. I had two great big silver maples cut down years ago and chopped down. Could that be creating a fungus underneath up into the grass?
Yeah, absolutely. There are diseases that happen in yards that as material breaks down underneath the ground, they call those fairy rings, that the ground and the grass actually above it dies because it's a release of nitrogen that's so great the turf can't handle that. Mm-hmm. And so there's really not a great fungicide as far as that goes to cure those. What we typically say there is try to aerify those areas really good in the spring and fall, and that'll speed up the decomposition in those areas. And hopefully the quicker that gets broke down in the soil, the quicker that this issue will go away for you. And then go ahead and add seed each fall to try to heal that back in.
All right, Tom, sounds like something you'll have to soldier through for a few more years. Thanks a lot for your call. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Catherine is on the line next in Marshall County. Hi, Catherine.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Yes, I'm wanting to go organic with my lawn. I've looked a little bit at, I think, University of Minnesota and other places are actually offering incentives to feed your lawn to clover. And I'm wondering if there's anything here that you guys have for a resource or advice on doing that.
Well,
we don't actually have, we do have several extension publications. If you get on the extension site, there's a new one out on natural or organic fertilizers for the yard. And it's going to depend on what your use is. Clover obviously is very low maintenance, very low key, but if you have kids or dogs out there, they're going to be pretty rough on that and they're going to wear out that plant material there. So you might want to check out some of those resources that are out there about kind of natural or organic ways to manage your yard. Corn gluten meal has shown in the past, you know, to be great as a fertilizer source and weed control. So you might want to consider that. And again, there's publications out there for that on our website.
All right. And Aaron, I hear you looking something up. Did you have anything you wanted to add there?
Well, I was going to say, I was going to try to find the exact website, but I also know that the Iowa Stormwater Education Partnership has some nice resources related to going to native grasses and trying to do more kind of organic lawn situations as well. So if you look on the Iowa Stormwater Education Partnership, their website, you can find some information there as well.
All right, Catherine, I hope that helps you out. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Patrick is next in Kyoto with another lawn question. You're winning them all right now, Adam. Hello, Patrick.
Hey, how are we doing today?
Good. What's your question?
Fall is impending, and I'm curious what the best thing to do with our leaves are. We live out in the country, so it doesn't really matter how it looks in the fall, but should we mulch mow it under, get it all off the grass, or what's the best process for the grass?
Adam, what do you think?
Yep, the best thing to do with those leaves is to chop them up and make sure that they fall down through the canopy. They've got nutrients in them, so that's free fertilizer. So chop those leaves up and leave them in the yard.
I love that answer. Do you feel like it's catching on, Adam? I know that there's been a lot of talk about whether or not to rake in recent years, although I still see people raking big piles of leaves, and I think, just mow them, mow them.
Yeah, I think that, you know, more and more people are taking that advice and chopping them up and returning them back into the yard. So,
all right. So much easier and good for your lawn as well. All right. We have a question for you, Aaron. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Paul is on the line in South English. Hi, Paul.
Hi.
What's your question?
When could rhubarb be best fertilized?
Typically, the best time to fertilize rhubarb is in the early spring. So just as those, they always look a little bit alien to me, but as those leaves are just emerging up out of the soil in spring is typically the best time to apply fertilizer.
Just on top of the ground?
Yeah, you can work it into the soil, kind of just around, not right directly on top of the crowns of the plant, mm-hmm. but in the area of the soil immediately around the crowns of the plant.
Okay, and can iris leaves be removed at some point in the fall?
If you have any disease or kind of those challenges, it will be really important to get those up in the fall. I would not cut them back until after they've naturally died back following the first frost.
All right, Paul, thanks a lot for your call. This is a question from Greg in Cedar Rapids. He says, over the last 5 years, we have been... Oh, you know what? Oh, I'm sorry, I just misread the clock. I am going to continue to read this email. Okay, this is from Greg in Cedar Rapids. Over the last 5 years, we've been reshaping a detention basin weed patch into a pollinator garden. Since the area is owned by a homeowners association and the city doesn't allow burning, it has involved a lot of hand removal of ragweed, cocklebur, etc., and fall mowing. We have annually winter seeded the area with a combination of locally gathered seed and some wildflower seed mixes from Prairie Moon. In 2019, we started seeing a smattering of wildflowers with an emphasis on common milkweed, so necessary for monarchs. In 2020, we had an excellent crop of milkweed and an increase in cup plant and purple coneflower. This season, we had a significant increase in cup plant, purple coneflower, Monarda, and black-eyed Susan with a bit of brown eye Susan and rattlesnake master. My question is, why has there been a decrease in the common milkweed, even with the thousands of seeds we scatter each November? Is this something that's occurring elsewhere? Is it weather or drought related? Is milkweed seed particularly sensitive to salt or lawn chemicals? Aaron, do you want to try that one first?
Sure. You know, milkweed is typically a pretty easy plant to grow from seed. It's one of the reasons why it's called milkweed. It can get quite weedy in some situations. But a lot of the plants that you had just mentioned that were really starting to get established, the purple, those are pretty strong competitors. And so I suspect that it's just being a little bit out-competed. Milkweed tends to germinate and come up just a little bit later in the spring than some of those plants may. And so that would probably lead to some of that. It's not uncommon for these more natural plantings to kind of ebb and flow in the species that are in them. And it sounds like a lot of the work that you're doing is good, keeping the weeds out, the woody plants out with mowings and well-timed weedings and those kinds of things. So it's likely just being outcompeted a little bit. You could create areas for it if you really wanted to. Typically, when we have milkweed, we have plenty of it. So I suspect you may just need to make a little space for it in different parts of the area, and it should fill in for you.
Well, and I'm sure that's a little bit emotionally difficult to do when you've worked on making sure that you have all of these native plants to then pull out native plants to make sure that you have space for milkweed? But that's what you're recommending.
Yeah, I am. And you know, I wouldn't feel bad about it, especially if they're doing, you know, if there's plenty of others around. And, you know, cup plant's a good example of this. That it's such a large plant, it has these big, beautiful flowers on it. You feel really great about growing it. But boy, after a while, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
It does a good job of reseeding. And so you don't have to feel bad about giving something else a little bit of a chance.
All right. Here's a question from Brandon in Des Moines. I purchased some micro clover seed this spring to add to my lawn, but it took longer to get here than expected. And by the time I received it, we were already experiencing drought. Because of all of this, I haven't seeded it into my lawn yet. When should I do this? Would it be best to add it sometime this fall, or would it be better to wait until next spring and just hope that most of the seed is good? Adam?
I would seed that later this fall, mid-September. Those clovers typically like a little bit cooler germination temps than, say, a lot of the grasses. And so I would do it this fall. And the other good thing about that would be, again, you're going to germinate that, and it's not going to be in competition with, like, crabgrass that might germinate in that same space if you did it in the spring. So later this fall.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Linda is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Linda.
Hello, good morning. I love the show.
Oh, thanks.
I have a question. I have two, they're between 40 and 50-year-old ash trees. I have been having them treated by an arborist since, for the emerald ash borer. And they did that last year, so it won't be due again till next year. And they're both, one is in the front yard, one is in the side yard. Now, the front yard got hit a bit by the derecho, but it's perfectly fine this year. But the one that's kind of on the side yard, the south side of the yard, just in the last 2 weeks, it has suddenly been, the leaves are turning brown and they're falling off. And I didn't know if this was drought related because we haven't had that much moisture, or could this be the dreaded emerald ash borer finally getting to that tree?
Aaron, what do you think?
Well, there are, you know, ash has a number of pest and disease challenges, and emerald ash borer being by far the most significant one. But if you're treating the tree for emerald ash borer, those treatments are typically effective. And so I wouldn't suspect emerald ash borer if the tree has been treated for that. There are some other things that could play a role into this. The one that comes to mind is just the very broadly named ash decline, which is something that we see in established trees. It's often related to a combination of several factors, so it can be really hard to pinpoint what to do for something like that. I think it sounds like the tree is important for you, in particular since it is being treated for emerald ash borer. And so it could be as simple as drought. I mean, certainly established trees in super dry conditions will still show that. Ash is also one of the first trees to color up and drop its leaves in the fall. And so it may just be starting a little bit early because it's under more stress.
By the way, this is of the two trees. You know, the other one is showing no stress, but this one, about 10 years ago, we did have a metal bar put through it just so that so it wouldn't split, because obviously it was two kind of joined together. So that, it just to make sure that the thing didn't split and fall.
Sure. Well, and so that's even more reason, I think, to potentially have an arborist come out and look at it. It would be best to have, since this tree is valuable for you, to have somebody be able to actually look at the tree, see what's going on, because there are other things that may be playing a role, and it's likely that it's more than one factor, right? So that it may be under a little bit more stress because of dry conditions, and then on top of that, it's having, one of our native ash borers, not the emerald ash borer, that has kind of moved in. And that's added stress to the tree. And you put all this stuff together and you start to see the symptoms that you're seeing. So having somebody look at it to understand better what is going on is probably worth the investment.
All right, Linda, thanks a lot for your call. And here's a quick question for you, Adam, from Rock. Can I spread aged wood ashes on my lawn, and is it beneficial?
Yeah, that's actually a pretty common question right now. You know, there's a lot of ash or burn pile debris laying around the state. And you can spread it across the yard. Just spread it out thinly. There are some nutrients in it. And so, again, it would work right into the soil, and there's a little bit of benefit. It's not the greatest fertilizer in the world, but there are some benefits to it.
All right. So it's kind of what I'm hearing you say is it's an okay way to get rid of your wood ash?
Yes. Yep. It's fine.
All right. Which is probably exactly why Rock was asking the question. All right. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions about plants and trees. And of course, we've been focusing a lot on lawns this hour with our turf grass specialist, Adam Tomes, here. He's an assistant professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. Aaron Stile is here as well, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. And you can call 866-780-9100. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. This is Talk of Iowa.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. You are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Aaron Stile and Adam Tomes, Assistant Professor of Horticulture at ISU and Turf Grass Specialist. We've been talking a lot about lawns, but you are welcome to join the conversation with any of your plant questions. And let's go back to the phones. David is on the line in Illinois. Hi, David.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, my question is that I live in a condo area, and the house was built 2 years ago, and the actual lot that the house is on was sodded. But I just purchased an additional plot of land next to my lot that is weeds. It's, you know, purple clover and Queen Anne's lace and all those normal things you see, dandelions. And I'm wondering, should I have that like plowed up, rototilled, whatever, before I plant grass, or is there an easier way?
Adam?
Yeah, you're going to want to remove those weeds. And the biggest reasoning behind that is those are all competition for grass. And so that would be spots that you're going to struggle with getting good grass establishment in. So the more pure area of just pure soil, the better stand you're going to get.
All right, David, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Nick in West Des Moines. Hi, Nick.
Hello, good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
I got a fungus problem in my backyard. Started about mid-June, and it starts out as about 6-inch round spots, starting to turn yellow at the tip and then browning out. And then that yellowing, orangish color goes down to the crown where it collapses and creates dead spots. I've tried several different fungicides and not getting anything to work or even slow it down. What am I possibly dealing with?
It sounds to me like you may have dollar spot, and that's pretty common, especially with the size of the spots that you're talking about, and it's very severe. The good news is with dollar spot, one of the best ways to get rid of it is to fertilize. And so I would try to apply some fertilizer to it this fall here.
All right, Nick, thanks a lot for your call. And you, again, can join the conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number. Here's a question from Greg in Cedar Rapids. I live in Cedar Rapids, and due to the derecho last year, my 40-foot tall and very old blue spruce fell. I chipped up the root ball, and new dirt was used to fill the hole left from that root ball. The ground surrounding it was lightly tilled. Last fall and this spring, I've attempted to grow grass on this area. However, I'm unable to grow lasting grass. What am I doing wrong, and how can I improve the thickness and health of the grass in this area?
Yeah, that's a common problem for people that had trees lost last summer. I would make sure to do a soil test here and check and see if the soil there is maybe too acidic. This would be an opportunity where, with the tree growing there for years and years, it could have changed the acidity of the soil in that area. And so I would check that, and more than likely the pH of the soil is probably too low for good turf growth. So that would be where you would add lime, if that's true.
All right. Thanks a lot for that question. Here's one for you, Aaron, from Kevin. I bought 3 straight talk privets last summer, and they did well. But this summer, with weekly watering, the leaves have wilted and look stunted, as well as the color on the leaf is slightly milky colored, and many have fallen off the bush. Can I do anything to save them? I did put 7 down to try to kill any bugs that may have taken to it.
It sounds like this is an environmental issue more so than a pest. I would kind of evaluate the watering practices. One of the things that we often talk about is making sure that you keep newly planted things well watered, especially that original root ball. And I suspect that once a week may have been a little too much water. And so often my suggestion, especially for plants that have been established for about a year, is you probably don't have to water as much as you did that first year, but you should check for water probably about once a week. And some weeks you'll end up watering, and some weeks you won't need to. And you'll want to check that original soil or that original root ball as well as the surrounding soil. And just use your finger. If you dig down a little bit, and if it's all damp, you're good to go. And if it feels dry, then that's when I would apply water. Some of what it sounds like is going on might be things related to root rot, which would come from too much water. Kind of evaluate the watering practices, making sure you allow the soil to dry out between waterings, not completely bone dry, but to make sure that it's not staying consistently wet or soggy. Will help hopefully these plants grow out of this root issue and recover.
All right. That's frustrating when you think you're doing something right.
And I know.
It turns out to be just the wrong thing. So what do you think the long-term prognosis is?
Privet's a pretty tough plant. So I would suspect that if it is too wet, if we can let the soil dry out in between waterings, only water when it's actually needed, rather than saying water every week, I like to say to check for water every week and then only water if needed. So continue to do that kind of weekly check-in. Just know that you may not have to apply water each time, and hopefully it can grow out of it. I think there's a decent chance that it will.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Mark is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I wanted to follow up on the mulching question. I've heard mixed opinions on whether or not to bag or mulch grass. And I was also wondering, with the previous mulching question of the leaves, does it matter what kind of tree that you're mulching the leaves?
Yep, good questions. So first of all, bagging versus mulching the grass. The only time I would say to bag the grass is if you've gotten in a period where you've missed several mowings and it's really, really tall and you can't chop it back up to fall in the canopy. We don't want it to lay on the surface and smother out the light from the other grass that's left after mowing. So as long as you follow the 1/3 rule, you can always return your clippings. Again, that's free fertilizer, and that's always good for the yard. So I would say always try to mulch your grass back and don't bag it. As far as the leaves go, really, there's been some work that's done that have said oak leaves actually help prevent some weeds. And so I've never seen anything that has said that any one type of tree is bad to have the leaves return back. And some actually show some benefit to the yard as far as kind of a limiting weeds. So return all those leaves back.
You know, there's,
could I also ask the question about the soil testing? Doesn't Iowa State Extension offer that service?
They no longer have a soil testing lab on campus. Your local extension office has a list of labs that do soil testing that you can work with.
All right. And Aaron, what did you want to add?
I was just going to add, you know, we talked a lot about mulching leaves or mowing leaves into the lawn. One of the things I'd like to point out is that this is a good task to do on a regular basis in the fall. If you wait for all of the leaves to fall on your lawn and then try to mow all of that in at once, it's going to be really difficult to get it all chopped up and down inside the canopy of the grass. But if you're doing it on a regular basis, much easier. So that's the only limitation I've seen with mowing leaves into the lawn, like kind of practically speaking. You can't let it all pile up and then try to mow it in. It's best to get out there on a regular basis so that you can get it nicely chopped up and down inside the canopy of the leaves much easier.
Excellent advice, Mark. Thanks a lot for your call. Next, let's go to Tom in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
I've listened to your information about seeding and fertilizing, and my question is, do you do them at the same time, or is there a wait period, one before the other?
Adam?
Yeah, that's a good question. You can seed and fertilize at the same time. If you're establishing, you know, a new yard from scratch, obviously a starter fertilizer would be great to put down at the exact same time as seeding, because that will provide nutrients to the newly emerging grass.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Tom. 866-780-9100. Next up, Ryan in North Liberty. Hi, Ryan.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's your question?
So I bought a house about 4 years ago, and there was a strip of landscaping along the exposed sort of cement foundation, and it faces the south. So it gets a lot of heat. There's no shade over there. And there were some tall grasses. I'm sorry, I don't know what kinds they are, but they're just not doing well. And I would just love to get some suggestions as to what I can put in those beds that are gonna withstand all that heat and sun.
Aaron?
So are you thinking perennial, woody plant, either or?
Yeah, I mean, I'm open to anything. It'd be nice to have some mix of color and and things that are maybe not, don't require a whole lot of upkeep, maybe?
Sure. Well, typically, actually, a lot of the ornamental grasses would be on my list for a hot situation like that. Things like switchgrass, which would be native, little blue stem, which has nice fall color, is also native. I would also look at what's often referred to as Carl Forrester grass or feather reed grass. This isn't quite native, but is a nice early season grass, maiden grass. These are all pretty tough plants. Color-wise, perennial-wise, the sedums are great. The purple coneflower would do well in that situation. Daylilies would do well in that situation. And then shrub-wise, a lot of the really kind of tough shrubs are pretty common and easy to find in garden centers. So things like spirea, which, you know, I have mixed emotions recommending. It's a very common plant, but it's very colorful and it's very tough. And so if you're looking for low maintenance, it's the kind of plant they put in front of gas stations. So it must be easy to grow. So that would be one. Nine bark tends to do pretty well in that kind of situation potentially, and is fairly easy to grow, as is a lot of the viburnums, red twig dogwood, and some of those shrubs would be, I think, good places to start.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Ryan. That gives you a long list to work with. Next up, Olivia in Dubuque. Hi, Olivia.
Hi. Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Oh, I have a, we have in our lawn, we have wild violets, and we also have spurge. And I've been using tricolor ester on the wild violets. Seems to work. Is there any other thing to use?
Adam?
No, unfortunately, those are two very hard to control weeds. You may want to actually get a herbicide that has more than just triclopyr in it. And there's many different ones out there, but sometimes the combination of products, 2 to 3 active ingredients, will actually help increase your control of those weeds.
Well, I tried to use Ortho has not their regular lawn weed, but their other one is kind of a bluer purple one. That didn't work at all. So that's when I went to try Copler. So our neighbor doesn't control his wild violets. So I try to keep them from coming over because they will destroy your lawn. They're very invasive. So anyway.
All right, Olivia, thanks a lot for your call. Adam, did you have anything you wanted to add?
No, I was just going to say maybe try a different product and one that definitely contains triclopyr, because that is probably one of the most effective against wild violet. And then make sure that you spray it, you know, again in the fall, because that'll take it up and give you good control.
All right. And on the subject of herbicide, from Ellen, I have a long row of 20-year-old Techne arborvitae growing on my west lot line. I've discovered that a huge amount of creeping Charlie is spreading under the trees from my neighbor's field. How can I destroy the weed from under the trees with triclopyr without destroying my windbreak trees? Can I spray or must I paint? If the weed killer happens to get on the tree leaves, will it destroy the tree? Is it too early to begin applying weed killer? Adam, lots of questions.
Yeah, lots of questions there. You can spray. Be careful to spray. Obviously, you want to keep the herbicide application low and down away from the trees that you're trying to protect. And if you follow label rates, you should be okay. Again, wait till after the first frost to spray this. Creeping Charlie is going to be a problematic weed, so it's going to be a multiple-year activity for you, unfortunately, to try to control.
All right. Here's a question from Julie in Des Moines. Most of the advice seems to be aimed at cool season grasses. I want to know how to get zoysia grass to take over my lawn.
Sure. Zoysia grass, this has been a heck of a year for that. Again, we just put out a publication on how to best manage warm season grasses on our website for the extension store, so she may want to check that out. But basically, you would fertilize and mow and water those grasses during the summer months and neglect them in the fall and the early spring, as that's the time of the year that those grasses are dormant.
All right. Aaron, here's a question from Elaine. In the middle of May, I had a single-trunked serviceberry tree planted in my front yard. It is 10 to 12 feet tall. Suckers are now emerging. I'd really like to have a multiple-trunked serviceberry, so should I just let the suckers continue to grow?
Yeah, you absolutely can do that. And you may not want quite that many branches at the base. You may select 2 or 3 of the ones that are pointed in the right direction for wherever your situation is, but you can absolutely let those go. I think serviceberry looks very nice as a multi-stemmed small tree.
All right, and final, very quick question for you, Adam, from Jude. My yard is full of weeds, namely dandelion. What can I do without using toxic spray?
Yeah, so this is going to be a little bit slower process, but corn gluten meal, repeated applications, once in the spring and once in the fall at 10 to 20 pounds of product per 1,000 square feet will help thicken the yard as well as slowly, naturally work away at removing those weeds.
All right, so be persistent, but that's definitely a great option. Adam, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Adam Tomes, turfgrass specialist, assistant professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. Aaron Stile, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Aaron Stile, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. We will be back again next Friday with Horticulture Day here on Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbe. Have a great weekend.